LSU Spurscast, episode 536. My name is Paul Garcia, and I am the host of the Spurscast. Joining me in studio for this round one Spurs playoff preview is Project Spurs' Colin Reed. How you doing, Colin?
Doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing well, Colin. So, you know, 82 games have come and gone. The Spurs went 48-34. They didn't quite get 50 wins, but they did do better than last year in terms of, you know, getting one win better than last year's team. They ended up as the seventh seed this year, and they're going to be playing the Denver Nuggets on the road to open the playoffs. So, Colin, we're not – just real quick, you know, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but kind of just what were your thoughts on the season, just the regular season for the Spurs?
So, I can't remember because it's so long ago. I think when I came on here and we did the predictions, I actually think 48-34 is exactly where I landed.
Oh, wow.
I have to go back and check. But yeah. I think that there were – and even doing that, there were some higher highs and lower lows than I thought. I think that was kind of the understanding, is that this team was going to be one that had a higher ceiling and potentially a lower floor than last season's. But that was even more extreme maybe than I thought. And I don't think anyone would have expected Derek White to be as important as he was. But he's definitely solidified himself as like part of their young core. So I think that all in all, you know, 50 is a nice number that people like, and it's a number that the Spurs hit a billion times. But I think a playoff berth for where this team started the season is a success.
Yeah, it was really incredible the fact that, you know, the Spurs and Rockets both impressed me this year. Just the fact that, you know, by like early December, we thought these two teams were headed in the worst direction. You know, they were right there in the 14th, 13th in the standings out west, looking like lottery teams, to the point where like I was actually having to do research on lottery odds for the Spurs at one point. And then, you know, like we said, like, you know, they lost DeJounte Murray in the year. They had the point guard issue with Derek White, where he got hurt too. You know, a lot of different issues. Pau Gasol was supposed to be a rotation player. Then he gets hurt. Then when he comes back, that doesn't work out. They kind of bring in Jakob. They bring in DeMar. All these new players that hadn't been part of the system. And, you know, Pau puts together another good team. Obviously, this is a very different built Spurs team because of the fact that the one thing they've always been able to hang their hat on is defense. And this is the one thing that this team has kind of been missing. Pop has over this whole season basically made comments about how the defense is there sometimes, it's not there most times. So it's really about consistency, and you know that's kind of going to be the, in my opinion, it's going to be the whether they succeed or go down in the playoffs here, is how much of that defense is consistent on a nightly basis in these playoffs. So it's a pretty good season for the Spurs. We'll see now what happens as they get ready to go into the playoffs. And luckily for them, they did draw a really good part of the bracket. Now, again, they'd have to beat Denver first, but if they were to pass Denver, it stacks up pretty well for them in the 3-6 matchup who they'd face. And then they wouldn't, you know, if they could win that second round, well, then they wouldn't have to play Golden State until the conference finals, you know, assuming the Warriors would get there. So let's first begin, though, with what's in front of the Spurs. And their first test is the Denver Nuggets. Now, the Spurs are obviously the underdog in the series. They're not the favorite. Even though a lot of Spurs fans, I had put an initial just instant reaction kind of Twitter poll, and like it was like almost 70-30 in favor of the Spurs. Whereas nationally and you know, Las Vegas wise, it doesn't look like as many people are going to pick the Spurs in this series. So let's go ahead and jump off right off the bat, Colin, and let's jump into these lineups of who these two teams play. The Spurs have a core nine rotation of starting group of Derek White, Bryn Forbes, DeMar DeRozan, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Jakob Poeltl. Off the bench, they have Patty Mills, Marco Bellinelli, Rudy Gay, and Davis Bertans. On the flip side for the Nuggets, they have starting Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Will Barton, Paul Millsap, and Nikola Jokic. Coming off the bench for them is Monty Morris, Malik Beasley, Torrey Craig, and Mason Plumlee. Let's start off with the guards first. Okay, so those are basically Spurscast listeners, the rotation players that these teams are expecting to play. Now other players can be thrown into the fold, you know, depending on different matchups, like somebody like Hernan Gomez for the Nuggets or Isaiah Thomas or just some of those players. Whereas the Spurs could maybe bring in somebody like Dante Cunningham, or if it went really extreme, Pop really wanted to experiment, go with Lonnie Walker IV, you know, who's seen some action lately. But for now, those are probably the 18 guys who will be playing consistently in this series. Let's begin with the wing, the guards. Okay, let's start off with the point guards. So you're probably gonna have Derek White versus Jamal Murray. Derek White usage of 19.6%. Jamal Murray 25% usage. Derek scores 9.9 points. Jamal Murray scores 18.2 points. Both guys are over three assists a game. Both guys are about 3.7 rebounds. Both average over about a turnover. Jamal averages his 2 turnovers. Both get steals. So looking at their shooting splits, Derek's shooting 48% from the floor, 34% from three, and 77% from the free throw line. Murray is shooting 44% from the floor, 37% from three, and he's a high volume 3-point shooter. So he's dangerous off those screens that the Spurs sometimes give up in terms of those above the break threes, and then 85% from the free throw line. What do you think about that first point guard matchup?
So I think that there are a couple X factors in this series. If the Spurs want to have a chance to be in the series, if the Spurs want to have a chance to be in it at all. And I think the first one really is how well White plays on defense. And I think Murray is a huge part of that. You know, he is, I honestly don't watch the Nuggets too much, but just from what I know, he's probably definitely their second best player. I think that one of the skills that White has on defense, and this is something you've talked about, is his ability to fight around screens. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be like vital in this series against a player like Murray. So obviously, I think that Murray is going to be a bigger offensive threat than Derek will be, but I don't think that's what Derek is going to be asked to do. But I think if Derek can throw Jamal Murray off of his offensive game at all, I think that's one of the ways that the Spurs can be competitive in this series.
Yeah, and for me, what I'm really going to watch for is what I just told you, which is that the Spurs like to, you know, give up that above the break three, which is having Jakob drop on screens, having LaMarcus drop. And so if Murray's shooting 37%, you know, that's really going to make Pop think, you know, should I keep going with this route or maybe change up my defense? And then that becomes obviously an issue for the Spurs because they're not their defense really doesn't have a lot going for them. But, you know, if the Nuggets were to put that kind of pressure with Murray shooting from the outside, I think that's something to watch. Now, he's not a player, Murray, luckily. He's not a guy who gets a lot of contact, goes to the rim. He doesn't get a lot of free throw attempts. So that's something that'll work in Derek's favor and the Spurs' favor. So they really just got to watch his jump shooting. And if his jumper's falling, then he could make them rethink their defense. I agree with you. For right now, I don't think White has to be that dominant scorer. You know, he can do it, like you saw in that closing game against the Mavs of the regular season where, you know, the Spurs were about to lose that game or let the Mavs come back. And White hit, you know, had like five points in like seven, you know, of their last 7 points real quickly. He had some big baskets. So that is something to watch. Let's move over to the next matchup, probably out in the starting lineup. And this one I'm a little curious. Who do you think is going to guard Bryn Forbes? Or do you think they'll put Bryn Forbes on? Do you think they'll put him on Will Barton or Gary Harris?
That is a good question.
I feel like, don't you think Harris is the better defender out of those two, out of Barton? Or what do you think?
Oh, yeah.
So I assume they'll put then Harris on DeRozan, mm-hmm. since he's obviously the Spurs' best offensive player from the wing. And so, okay, so let's look at it this way. Let's look at Forbes versus Will Barton in the starting lineup. So usage percentage, Forbes is not a high usage guy, 16.8%. Barton is a little bit higher, 20.4%. Both guys average about 11 points, you know, almost 12 points, both of them if you round them out. Both get about over 2 assists. Both Barton's a better rebounder just by 2 rebounds. Both turn over the ball once per game. Bryn is just a lights out shooter that we've seen this year. 46% from the floor, 43% from 3. Barton, 40% from the floor. He's kind of right on the cusp of being a league average 3-point shooter, 34%. But, you know, just in my mind, I never do trust him whenever I see his shot going up from 3. I trust more of his mid-range game. But Bryn's obviously a better free throw shooter, but Barton gets the line probably more so. What do you think about this matchup with Barton and Forbes?
Yes, I think it's going to be important for Forbes to keep Barton in front of him because, like you said, I think he looks to drive more than he does to shoot, Barton does. So I think, obviously, Forbes is a great shooter, so I think that if they do put Barton on Forbes, they're going to kind of run Barton through the gauntlet and have a bunch of off-ball screens, a bunch of weak side action to get Forbes freed up for a shot. And I think that's definitely a strategy they should be employing. And obviously it's not going to be their main offensive weapon, but I do think it'll be one that can be effective for them. But I do think, like I said, on the other side, guarding Barton's threes won't be of a big of a deal for Forbes as much as, like I said, just keeping him in front of him when Barton does tend to drive. You mentioned the mid-range. I mean, we might get to this eventually, but that's one of the other problems with the drop defense that the Spurs do play is that it's designed to give up mid-range. You know, we saw that in that series against the Rockets a couple years ago. But percentile-wise, compared to the rest of the league, the mid-range is actually the Nuggets' like best area. They're like sixth in accuracy in the mid-range of the whole league. So that drop defense might have problems in other areas, and I think this is another matchup, that Forbes-Barton matchup, where if the Spurs have Forbes chase him over the screen and have the big drop back, they could pay for that with the shots they give up in the mid-range just because the Nuggets are such a good mid-range shooting team.
For sure, and I agree with you there where, you know, it's really going to be on Forbes to try to limit Barton's penetration as much as possible because, like we said, he averages almost 3 assists, plus he's scoring almost 12 points per game. So when you put that together, it's almost like 18 points before he's providing on offense. So Bryn does have a tough assignment ahead for him in that matchup against Barton. And, of course, for Barton guarding Bryn, it's going to come down to, you know, how much does he help off of Bryn, because that's kind of how Bryn gets almost all his shots is when DeRozan penetrates, when LaMarcus, you know, gets double-teamed and they move the ball around and they find Bryn, he's just a spot-up shooter. And now he can drive a little bit, you know, with that mid-range and that little floater that he has, but it's specifically his outside shooting where he gets most of his points from. Yeah, feel free to incorporate all those stats. I don't want to go into every single stat here today, but, you know, that's good to bring those in. Let's look at the next matchup. So now we're going to assume that Gary Harris will be the one guarding DeMar DeRozan. Okay, so this is an interesting matchup here. So the DeRozan, you know, he's obviously the highest usage player for the Spurs. He's their main playmaker, 30.6% usage. Harris, 19.1%. DeRozan averages 21 points per game. Harris averages about 13. DeRozan gives the Spurs 6 assists per game and 6 rebounds. Harris gives the Nuggets about 3 rebounds and about 2 assists. DeRozan turns the ball over about 3 times per game. Harris only 1 turnover, and then both guys get about 1 steal. DeRozan this year is shooting 48% from the floor and 83% from the free throw line. We know he's not a 3-point threat. He doesn't take threes. Whereas Harris is shooting 42% from the floor, 34% from 3, which is, you know, right below league average, and then 80% from the free throw line, but he doesn't get there too often either. So what do you think about this match between DeRozan and Harris?
Yeah, so that's another one that I'm watching. You know, my assignment for the Spurs throughout the playoff is to look at the opponent's defense against the Spurs. And kind of the thing that that first came to mind about the Nuggets defending DeRozan, and it'll obviously be true in this matchup, is do they give him, when he does that baseline drive where he kicks out to a three-point shooter, are they going to, like, try to keep his vision from those shooters, like, open? Like, how well he is able to see three-point shooters and how open those three-point shooters get when he does those baseline drives, I think will be a huge part of the Spurs offense in this series, whether that is Forbes or Bertans or, you know, any Mills, Bellinelli. So I think that I'm interested to see how the Nuggets try to handle that.
Yeah.
But then beside that, I'm interested to see, because, you know, there are nights where you feel like DeRozan is maybe passing too much. And then there are other nights where you think maybe he's kind of forcing his shots. And then there's other nights where it seems like he knows the perfect combination. And I'm interested to see if we get one or the other of those two, or if he's able to kind of get into his groove.
And something there is, you know, you mentioned how DeRozan's the main guy who creates for the Spurs as outside shooters, you know, Bertans, Forbes, all these guys like we mentioned earlier, Patty Mills. The Nuggets are actually, if you look at their defensive stats, are actually really good at taking away the above the break threes, those non-corner threes. So they only let opponents shoot 25% of those shots, which is 12th, which is a really good defensive ranking. And they're the best team in accuracy, in opponent accuracy at taking away that shot. So teams only shoot 33% from that shot, the above the break three, which is a stat that the Spurs are, I think, second in on their shooting side on the offense. So we know the Spurs don't take a lot of threes, but that's something interesting that Denver has a scheme already we've seen by the stats where they can take away, you know, they're actually really good at taking away that above the break three. So what could happen if they do take away a lot of those good three point shooters from the Spurs, like Bellinelli? They lower their percentages, like Patty Mills, you know, like Rudy Gay, all those guys that the Spurs really rely on heavily. So that's definitely something to watch. On DeRozan's end, I do want, you know, Harris, again, is more of a three-point shooter, outside player. And so, you know, DeRozan does get caught a lot, gambling a lot with the Spurs. So he has to really pay attention to his weak side defense. You know, how far is he going to help out? You know, not losing his man. So that's definitely something to watch. And also just getting back on defense and transition is something interesting to watch for DeRozan. All right, Colin, let's go to the next matchup. And that is LaMarcus Aldridge versus Paul Millsap, most likely at the four. Aldridge is obviously a playmaker for the Spurs, 25.5% usage. Millsap is at 18.8%. So his amount of responsibility in the offense, you know, compared to the years that he was in Atlanta, has tailed off a little bit as he's gotten older. Aldridge is averaging 21 points per game. Millsap's averaging about 13. Aldridge grabs about 9 rebounds. Millsap grabs about 7. Both players average about 2 assists. Each guy averages over a turnover. Millsap is better at stealing the ball, 1.2 steals, whereas Aldridge is better at protecting the paint with 1.3 blocks. Aldridge is shooting 52% from the floor and 85% from the free throw line. We know he's not a three-point threat as well like DeRozan, Whereas Millsap is shooting 48% from the floor. He doesn't take a lot of threes. He's not a high volume shooter, but he shoots about, I think the last stats showed about two a game. So, but he's making them pretty well. He's making them at 37% clip, and then 73% for the free throw line. What do you think about this matchup?
So, for both of these players, I actually think that I'm interested to see how much double teams will come into play, but yes, in different ways. So, I'm interested to see how often the Nuggets double team Aldridge. So, how often they bring over either one of the wings or Jokic. And then, kind of the opposite, I'm interested to see if the Spurs double team Jokic. And then, if so, are the Nuggets able to make them pay? Will Millsap be open for a three? But, you know, I think that Aldridge is best on defense around the paint. And I think that pulling him out to the perimeter, if he is guarding Millsap and if that's what Millsap does, that is definitely, you know, he's not as good at guarding on the perimeter as he is at the rim. So I do think that one of Millsap's strengths, and even if he's not shooting that many, just his ability to knock it down, and the Spurs have to respect that, kind of goes into Aldridge's weakness on defense. So I think that'll be interesting to see how often they try to play into that, or how often he's open from three because the Spurs are trying to double Jokic.
Okay, and one thing I wanted to point out, you know, that was a good observation, is I really do think that Denver's, you know, you're going to see them be, because I don't think he can guard him one-on-one. Millsap can guard Aldridge one-on-one, should I say, as I'm looking at that matchup. So one note to note about Denver's defense is they're not really good at protecting the paint or, you know, playing inside. In terms of frequency, they allow opponents to shoot 38% of their shots, which is 24th ranked from the rim. And then teams shoot 63% on them at the rim, which is about average. So I feel like there's an area right there that the Spurs can exploit by having DeRozan, you know, attack the paint, having Aldridge be a little bit more physical, not just relying on his mid-range jumper. You know, getting, you know, we've seen Aldridge do that where he uses that little jump hook and really gets physical with guys, puts his shoulder into them. And so if he can do that against Millsap and be pretty effective, I really feel like then, of course, there's going to be some double-teaming action toward him, and that obviously gets the defense moving, and that favors the Spurs as long as they're hitting their jump shots and the Nuggets aren't making all their rotations. So, you know, again, I go with you there. I think Aldridge has the advantage offensively. He has a huge responsibility to produce for the Spurs, to playmake for them, whereas Millsap, you know, it's more, you know, spreading out the floor for Jokic and all these guys and Jamal Murray and those kind of guys. Let's go to the next matchup, and this is the center matchup, which is going to be Nikola Jokic, most likely, versus Jakob Poeltl. So Poeltl is a low usage kind of player, 12.2% usage. Jokic is very high, 29.5%. Poeltl only averages about 6 points per game. Jokic averages 20. Jokic grabs 11 rebounds. Poeltl grabs 5. Jokic is almost like DeRozan. He actually has more assists than DeRozan. He's a playmaker, 7.3 assists per game. You know, Jokic as a center. And then, you know, Poeltl's not expected to do that for the Spurs, 1.2 assists. Poeltl shoots 65%, you know, mostly by the rim. We know it's all just layups and dunks. And then 53% at the free throw line if he does get fouled. Not a good free throw shooter. Jokic turns the ball over 3.1 times and gets 1.4 steals. Jokic is shooting 51% from the floor this year, 31% from three. So he will take it. I think he takes almost like three a game. But it's not, you know, right now it's not falling at a great rate in terms of his season data. And then 82% from the free throw line, which he is a good free throw shooter. So obviously we know that Jokic is the better player here offensively in this matchup. What did the Spurs got to do to slow him down or limit him?
Yeah, so I talked about White being kind of one of the X factors for the Spurs if they want to stay competitive. For me, the other one was definitely Poeltl. Because I think that, you know, he's not going to stop Jokic. But if he can play him well enough that the Spurs don't have to double Jokic, I think that's such a huge benefit. You know, I think that the White-Poeltl pick and roll, the DeRozan-Poeltl pick and roll, will be one of the plays that we see pretty frequently with these lineups that you're talking about here, because they're going to want to get Jokic involved in any sort of action like that.
For sure.
So Poeltl on offense, his role necessarily won't be to score a bunch, even though in those pick and rolls he can finish at the rim when they need him to, but it's going to be being a good screener and getting Jokic involved in the defense. So I think that, you know, his defense on Jokic is still going to do what he does, but if he can play him well enough, then that really gets the Spurs into the series, kind of like White on Murray.
Okay, yeah, and you know, one thing that favors the Spurs is that they don't give up a lot of shots at the rim. That's actually what they're really good at defensively, one of their few elite areas on defense. They only allow 33% of the opponent's shots to come at the rim, which is third. However, when opponents do get to the rim, they're making 63% of those shots, which is about 18th, which isn't very good. So I think that What I'm trying to say here is that as long as the Spurs don't have to send those double teams on those Jokic post-ups, and they could try to let Poeltl handle them as much as they can one-on-one, it really helps the Spurs. Because the minute the Spurs have to start double-teaming and kind of scrambling on defense, that's when you see them get picked apart a lot by other teams, just because they don't have that communication. They don't have that ground defense like past Spurs teams have had. So I think that's a huge part. Jokic does like to operate a lot from the elbows. So I do want to see how much Pop makes Poeltl kind of be in his space, be in his vicinity, kind of not letting him like kind of scout the floor, see which kind of back cuts he wants to make or plays above the arc. So if I was the Spurs, I would just at least try for initially to kind of make this three. If they're gonna do those pick and rolls up top, make him try to beat them first, make them show that it's gonna be a devastating shot for them before abandoning that scheme that they have of Aldridge and Jokic dropping back. So that's kind of the matchup to watch there. And you're right, I didn't think about that too for the Spurs, is how much are they going to target Jokic? So that's an interesting thing, because DeRozan's going to be ready to do that. Rudy Gay's going to want to try that as well. So that's going to be on, and even Derek White too. How much can the Spurs exploit his defense and try to use that to their as a positive? Okay, Colin, now let's go to the bench here. Let's go look at, first, let's look at one of the Spurs' key playmakers, and that's Rudy Gay off the bench. His usage percentage is about 22.1%. He averages 13.7 points, 6.8 rebounds, 2.6 assists, 1.7 turnovers. He's shooting 50% from the floor, 40% from three, really good. But we know that he kind of, with this three-point shot, it's more so if it gets wide open or if he needs to take it, he'll take it. It's not like a high-volume three-point shot. And then 82% from the free throw line. Now, I don't know who exactly would match up with Gay at this moment. So just for now, I'm kind of just putting Torrey Craig there. He's going to be playing off the bench for the Nuggets. His usage is really low, 12%. Scores 5.7 points, 3.5 rebounds, 1 assist. Shoots 44% from the floor, 32% from three. So not a great three-point shooter right now. And then 70% from the free throw line. What do you think about Rudy Gay's? He's obviously the better player in terms of offensive repertoire for this matchup. What do you think about that?
Right. I think one of the improvements year over year that we have seen from Rudy is his improvement on defense. I think that was one of the we know that he was benched sometime last year when he feels like he should have been on the floor, and defense was a part of that maybe. And so I think that is an area where he has improved. So I think that this is another series where that might test him, because I'm interested to see that Nuggets bench has some other pretty good three-point shooters on there. So I'm interested to see how much like off-the-ball action they run and try to get kind of that involved. So it might not be as straight up like how good is he in that matchup defensively as much as it is how good is he in kind of not allowing that action to get him taken too far out of the play or anything. But like you said, obviously on offense, the Spurs are really going to need him to produce, especially in the moments where he is on the floor against Jokic, where you said he's going to try to get the Jokic involved on defense and just kind of taking those open shots. You were talking about how good the Nuggets are against above the break threes, but it looks like that's less true against corner threes, where the Spurs I believe the Spurs have like the best.
They're the most accurate.
Yeah, they're the most accurate from the corner three. Right. So I think that's going to be a big part of and this is just anecdotal, but I feel like that's where Rudy shoots a lot of his threes from memory. At least last night I remember taking one or two from there. So I think that hitting that open three is going to be big for the Spurs and kind of keeping the floor spaced, but then also kind of taking the ball to the hole when he needs to.
Yeah, and I really feel like Rudy has a lot of different matchups with his size that he can kind of exploit, even when the ball's rushed down the floor or, Spurs run a pick and roll. Like I said, he can try to take Jokic off the dribble. He can try to get, Court Craig. He can try to get Harris, Barton, all these kind of guys in post-up position, kind of run a pick and roll off them. Even the other players like Morris, Monty Morris. So there's a lot of different advantage where I think Rudy Gay has an advantage a lot of times against any of those players on the Nuggets where he can exploit them. And this is kind of something, now that we've gotten through Derek White, through DeRozan, through Aldridge, through Rudy Gay, this is something that I wanted to kind of talk about, which is that we're really going to see two different styles of offense here. We have, the Spurs offense is more of that old school one-on-one basketball where it's, you look at their assisted-made baskets. They're only assisting as a team on 58% of their makes, which is 22nd. Passes per game. The Spurs only throw about 281 passes, which is 27th, which is very rare for a Pop coach team to be so low in passes per game. And then, whereas the Nuggets on the flip side, they assist percentage. Look at this, 65%, which is second best in the league. So they definitely move the ball, score mostly all their baskets off made off assists. Passes per game, 309 passes per game, which is seventh in the league. So we're really going to see a battle of two different styles of offense, where you have the Spurs team, who I would say has the better one-on-one players when you talk about DeRozan, Aldridge, Rudy Gay, even Derek White sometimes, versus this Nuggets team who does better off cuts, off screens, off ball movement, penetration with Jokic and Jamal Murray is your pretty much your main two playmakers. What do you think about that? Just the stylistic difference.
Yeah, I think, you know, defense has been the struggle for the Spurs all season, as we've talked about. And I think that when you talk about a team that passes as much as they do and cuts and has this off-ball movement, I think that what comes to mind for me is the discipline.
Yeah.
This will test their defensive discipline. And this sounds like something a high school coach would say, but one of the changes I have seen since the All-Star break, and maybe it's been happening all along, but I've just been watching for it more, has been when an opponent does make a basket, you can see whoever's taking the ball out to throw it in is upset. Like, there's more pride now in terms of getting scored on than I feel like there was at the beginning of this season. So, and then we talked about it, I think, the last time I was on the podcast about how DeRozan is getting pretty good at when a team is making a cross-court pass to the wing on the weak side, like getting into that passing lane and stealing the ball there.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of stuff, getting their hands into passing lanes, kind of just bothering what they're trying to do, I think making them try to play, I think that's kind of always been the Spurs' best strategy basically for all time. So even though you were saying like they're not passing like Spurs teams normally do, I feel like the Spurs' strategy has always been try to make our opponent play like us and we'll just play that style better. And I feel like that's true here too. If they can disrupt them and kind of try to make them play straight up, try to make them play in the mid-range even though they're good in the mid-range, try to make them be an ISO one-on-one team, which they won't do all the time. If they can do that enough, they do have a chance.
Yeah, and you know, this is something that I talked about a few weeks ago when the Spurs were kind of clicking during that 9-game win streak, was that the fact that, like, in a way, having that one-on-one ISO-type scoring situation, especially in the playoffs, I think it's a better format, because that's kind of what it comes down to is, you know, who are the best players and who's making the plays down at the end of the game. And I really feel like the Spurs do have a lot more of those players right now in this series that have that type of repertoire. So I really feel that, but that might favor them. Again, it's going to all come down to the defense. We're going to get to that part a little bit on both these teams. If the Spurs can't play any defense in the series, then they're just going to get torched and it's going to be over. You know, they're going to have a chance. So we'll see there. Let's keep going down the some of the matchups, so the individual matchups. Let's look at the bench, the point guards, the backup point guards, should I say. For the Spurs, you have Patty Mills, and for the Nuggets, you have Monty Morris. Both guys, playmaking-wise, they're about 18% usage each, almost identical. Patty scores almost 10 points. Monty scores 10 points, basically. Both get over 3 assists. Both get over 2 rebounds. Patty turns it over 1.1 times. Both shoot well. Patty shooting 43% from the floor, 39% from 3. High volume shooter, 85% from the free throw line. Morris is shooting 49% from the floor, 41% from 3. You know, a pretty good volume of 3s also. And then 80% for the free throw line. What do you think about this matchup? On stats, it almost looks like they kind of just contribute the same for their teams.
Yeah, yeah. And it looks like, you know, Morris is a slightly better shooter, at least percentage-wise. So that will be an interesting matchup to see kind of who can produce more off the bench, because I think that the Nuggets bench has been a strength for them all season long. So I think that bench-v-bench matchup, the whole series will be important. But I think with them being so similar stat-wise, I think kind of seeing which one is able to produce a little bit more will actually have a greater impact than you might have imagined just because of how close they are.
Okay, yeah, for sure. I agree with you there. Let's go into the next matchup, and that's kind of Marco Bellinelli versus against Malik Beasley. I'm just calling Michael. I told you I wouldn't do that. Malik Beasley. Both guys, you know, not high usage guys. Beasley is at 16.2% usage. Belly's at 17.9%. Both guys score over 10 points. Belly's at about 11. Beasley's right at 11.3. Both guys get about 2.5 rebounds. Both average over an assist. Belly shooting 41% from the floor, 37% from three, a very high volume 3-point shooter, 90% free throw. Beasley is shooting 47% from the floor, a good 3-point shooter as well, 40% accuracy, and he will shoot threes. You know, that's one of his things. I think he shoots almost 5 a game. And then 85% from the free throw line. What do you think about this matchup?
Yeah, it's another matchup where they kind of look similar.
Yeah, stat-wise. Almost like everything like matches up, aligns.
Right. Yeah, and that's, you know, there have been. So I feel like the stats maybe don't always tell the story with any player, but you know, Bellinelli, I feel like he started the season shooting and it was pretty rough, and then he had a good stretch, and then now he's kind of returned to average, and so it's one of the, another one of those things where how well he's shooting will really determine his impact on the court. You know, I mean, he's going to get back and he's going to try to get into position. You know, I think that his value is less on the defensive side as much as it is if he's not hitting shots and the defense can like kind of sag off of him and pack the paint, that becomes a big problem. But if he's hitting them at least an average or an above average rate, then he's at least doing what the Spurs ask him. So I think that that'll be the big thing to watch from this matchup. You know, I'm not as familiar with Beasley's game, but I do think that, you know, they're going to need Bellinelli to hit his open shots. And if he's not, that's where they get into a little bit of trouble.
One thing these two guys can each do, and I've seen it, you know, this year from, obviously we know Bellinelli because you and I cover him more so, and I've seen Beasley do it a few times too, especially in that most recent Spurs game at Denver, is they can just get hot out like really quickly and make like three or four threes in a row, and then all of a sudden a game becomes like from 2 to like, you know, 9 or 12 just really fast because of these guys. They get the crowd ignited, you know, depending where they're playing. So I really feel like that they're kind of like, I don't want to say X factors, because I really feel, you know, but they're the kind of guys that can just shift momentum with just their playmaking, especially their outside shooting. So I think that's kind of where they're most important for each of their teams, is, you know, who can get hot at a certain moment in a game and kind of just shift the momentum of that game going forward. So that's kind of what those guys can both do. Let's look at the last two players that I have here. You know, they probably won't guard each other specifically, but kind of just, you know, they're in the rotation as like the ninth spot is. Davis Bertans for the Spurs and Plumlee from the Nuggets. Now, I forget, is he Mason or Marshall? I forgot. It's Mason, right?
I think it's Mason.
It's Mason, yeah. I forgot the Plumlee brothers. So anyway, I just wrote Plumlee, that's why. So anyway, Bertans and Plumlee. Bertans, you know, very low usage player, 12.7% usage. Plumlee's at 17.1%. Bertans averages 8 points, 3.5 rebounds, 1.3 assists. He shoots 45% from the floor, a high-volume three-point shooter, making 43% of his threes, very accurate, 88% from the free throw line. Plumlee is more of a rim runner type player, 7.8 points, 6.4 rebounds, 3 assists, 1.5 turnovers, shoots 59% from the floor and 56% from the free throw line. Doesn't kind of like Jakob, doesn't take any threes. So the Spurs don't have to worry about him and that factor. Now again, I don't think they're going to guard each other, but again, these are two guys that will come off the bench to give their big men some relief. What do you think about those two guys just individually?
Yeah, I think, you know, for Bertans, I think, you know, he's at one point was like the second best shooter by percentage, 3-point percentage in the league, and then last night I believe on the telecast they said he's fallen to 6th.
Oh, okay.
Which tells me that from the time he went from 2nd to 6th, that's been a pretty rough stretch over that time. So I think, you know, he's hit some big shots in key moments, but, you know, he hasn't shot the same as he did at the beginning of the year. But when you're talking about someone who can come off the bench and, like, change the momentum of the game, I think of that Milwaukee game in Milwaukee that the Spurs played in, where they were down a pretty healthy margin at the beginning of the game, and it looked like it'd be a blowout. And he came in and immediately hit, like, 2 or 3 shots and kind of got the Spurs back into it. So we know that he's capable of doing that. And like you talked about, it, I think for Plumlee, with one of the Spurs' strengths being keeping opponents from shooting at the rim and playing that drop style of defense, I think that's best to neutralize a player like this to kind of keep him from scoring and keep him from doing what he's comfortable doing. So they, like you said, they might have to change up their defense because of the other players, but if they do keep it that way, you know, that's the type of play style that really plays into the Spurs defense.
I think something to watch with San Antonio for Plumlee is, you know, San Antonio is an excellent offensive rebounding defensive, you know, on the defense side, not allowing offensive rebounds, should I say. They only allow 24% of the opponent's misses to be offensive rebounded, which is 5th best in the league, which is an elite skill. But again, now that you're playing a team with Jokic and Plumlee here, even Millsap's a scrappy player, I think that you definitely got to watch that part of the Spurs game, especially even though Denver's about an league average three-point shooting teams in terms of volume, you do got to watch that. You know, just not giving the Nuggets those second chance, you know, the second opponent, those second chance points or opportunities. And then again, Plumlee's off the bench, he's grabbing six rebounds a game. Okay, let's look through, just go through each section of the overall team makeup for these teams. Scoring, the Spurs are about, you know, basically we've gone through this, they're an elite offense on almost every metric. Let's see here, the Denver's basically, they're the lead offense also, but most of their metrics are like average and good range, nothing's really too terrible. They're non-corner threes, the above the break threes that we said that the Spurs might give up. They're not a great shooting team at that Denver. They only shoot 35% of those 20th. Bench points are almost about even. Fast break points. I really thought Denver, for some reason, I think that Denver plays super fast and like gets up and down the court. But they only score, when you look at fast break points, they only score two more points than the Spurs in the fast break. So they're actually about an average fast break team in terms of scoring. Is there in the scoring section, Colin? Is there anything that sticks out to you from this matchup or not? We can move.
Yeah, I think you know, they're both, you know, you have fifth and seventh in offensive rating. So I think they're both high powered offenses. Yeah. And I don't think there's any surprise there. I guess like you said,
when you are having a playmaking big man, when you're playing through a big man, I guess, you know, when you get out and run, you know, they're probably very efficient in scoring there. But in the half court, it does slow it down when you're trying to play through a center.
Yeah.
So I guess it's one of those things where when they're running, they're going, but the rest of the time, it is going to probably be a little bit slower.
Okay, let's look at where they take their shots from. So their shooting is obviously different. The Spurs' shooting is different from almost probably every playoff team here. They're obviously, we know how San Antonio is built. They're the number one frequency shooting team in terms of the mid-range. They take 47% of their shots come from the mid-range. They get to the free throw line about 18th in free throw rate. Now the Spurs are a really good shooting team in terms of accuracy. They do make a lot of their shots like we were talking about earlier. Whereas the Denver, you know, they actually don't get to the rim as much as I thought they did. They're 21st in terms of rim frequency on offense. They actually do, like you mentioned earlier, they're actually one of the surprising teams that does, you know, they're saying, if you give us mid-range shots, we'll take them. You know, we're not going to look for them, but if you give them to us, we'll take them. Which, like you said, is something that the Spurs' defense is built on doing, is allowing mid-range jumpers. So we'll see how that fares for the Spurs and whether or not they change their mindset. Denver's about average in getting threes. I thought they would have been higher, but they're not. And then free throw wise, they're actually worse than the Spurs at getting to the free throw line. They don't get there as much as they don't have a lot of players that get to the free throw line as much either. Is there anything you want to talk about from their shot locations?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think with the Nuggets not taking many free throws and the Spurs being such a disciplined team on giving up free throws, I think that that's going to play into that a lot. And they'll probably even be below what their season average was, which I think is really good for the Spurs, because I think, you know, when you do put teams on the line, another consequence of that is it's easier for the other team to get set up in the half court. You know, you're not able to like race them down the court and try to break down the defense before everyone gets there. So I think, you know, there's little things on offense that I think can help the Spurs on defense. And I think, you know, shot location is one of them too. You know, if teams are taking a bunch of above the break threes, you know, that's closer to the other side. So I think forcing them into the mid range will be helpful there too. But, you know, I think you mentioned this. I'm kind of surprised, just kind of thinking about how high powered the Nuggets offense is, kind of how good of 3-point shooters they do have. I am a little bit surprised looking at their frequency kind of up and down the line. I would have imagined it would be much higher in terms of threes taken. You know, they'd be much higher than 15th in the league. But other than that, I don't think.
So,
anything too surprising.
I want to go back to something on scoring that I did want to bring up. I forgot. I just saw it again. So look at this half-court points per play. Okay, half-court points per play. The Spurs are elite here. They score 100 points per 100 possessions in the half-court, fourth ranked. Denver, interestingly, only scores 95.3 points per 100, which is about 14th, which is about average. So, I mean, that's about a 5-point gap there, and that's pretty significant. So that's actually something the Spurs should look at there is, if, you know, like we said, they don't run a lot, the Nuggets, as much as we thought they did, but if you just specifically try to get them in a slower-paced game in the half court, this is going to favor San Antonio's offense.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, this is something that I think Nate Duncan had said on the Dunktown podcast back in December or early January when the Spurs were playing, like, all of a sudden their defense was really good, their offense was amazing. It was kind of a thing of, like, he was saying, well, of course their defense is going to be good if the opponents are like having to set up in the half court every time because the Spurs are making everything. You know, like when you miss and you just run, that's not happening when the Spurs are making their shots. So it's like weird, but it's intuitive. You know, the more shots the Spurs are making, the less that the Nuggets can just get out and run.
Yeah.
So if they are able to keep this up where their half court points per play is around that fourth ranking, you know, that's going to help their defense a lot. And then I think obviously the other thing is not feeding them easy shots with turnovers.
For sure, and that's something I didn't get to go into. We kind of went to the ball movement stats, but that's one of the things is that both of these teams actually do turn the ball over really, really well. The Spurs, are the best team in terms of ball security. They only turn the ball over on 12% of their possessions, which is first. The Nuggets turned it over about 14%, which is not too, it's only 2% higher. So even though it says they're average 13th, it's about only 2%. So both of these teams do don't turn the ball over, should I say. They're really good at that. And obviously we know by watching the Spurs all year that a lot of their losses do come when they have bad offensive nights and they do turn the ball over. So that's something to watch in terms of their security of the ball and how much Denver is going to gamble and kind of be more feisty and physical. That really disrupts the Spurs on offense, and they do end up getting a lot of turnovers, which leads to losses. Let's shift over to the defense. I'm just kind of looking through some of these numbers for both teams. You know, this is obviously whole season data. So the weird thing about the Spurs is there's like two different teams here. There's that early December team that we saw when they won that winning streak. That was like almost like a, you know, they were top five defense. Then they started playing terrible again. You know, after it, from January to like March, early March, and then from like late middle March till about early April, they were again a top five defensive team. So it's almost like which one of these teams is going to show up in this series. And obviously, if it's the one that the stats say this 20th ranked defense overall, then the Nuggets have a really good chance of winning this. But if it's that Spurs team that showed up twice this year and was playing top five level defense, so that was just shattering a lot of these numbers during those stretches, that's something interesting to watch. And, you know, during that stretch, though, something to note is that the Spurs have kind of stayed with their same game plan of, you know, like we said, dropping back on defense, not fouling the opponent, playing a very conservative approach, you know, not gambling too much, giving the mid-range up, just taking away the rim and the free throw line. And so that's kind of something to watch. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that kind of goes back to Derek White being an X factor to me, because yes. You know, he missed the beginning of the season, and when he did come in, he was not playing nearly as well as he is now. And when he started playing well, I think is kind of when that really hit in middle of December, early December. And then again, you know, you're talking about mid-January to like March at some point, but really I think when it hit rock bottom was on the rodeo road trip, and he missed, you know, the first half of that. And you look at the three rodeo road trip games after the All-Star break. One of them was the Raptors, which the Spurs actually played really close. Another one was the Nets, which they actually played really good defense. They just couldn't make a shot. And then the other one was the Knicks. They played pretty bad. So it really has been when Derek has been there and playing at the level that he has been for most of the season, their defense has been pretty good. I think the other big part of that is kind of home and away, you know.
Yeah, that's what I was about to tell you. That's a big part of why they're so inconsistent, is that they're just terrible on the road. I mean, that's just kind of what the numbers show. I mean, we've seen it with the eye test. You know, that's kind of where they get blown out a lot, is on the road. One thing I wanted to note, too, is the fast break points. So the Spurs give up 14 fast break points a game, which is about 20th in the league. I mean, defensively, which is not good. The Nuggets only give about 12 points. So that's only about 2-point difference. So it's not huge there. But I do know that looking at my own personal stat sheet that I keep on the Spurs, when they give up almost like 20 or more fast break points, they just get that's a lot of their losses come from that. So I really think that transition defense is huge, whether the Spurs miss a shot, even when the teams make a shot, sometimes they get out and, you know, outlet the ball. So that's something to watch at the Spurs. Continuing looking at some of the shot locations on defense, we've kind of gone through the philosophy for the Spurs. The Nuggets is a little bit different, their philosophy on defense. You know, they do give up the rim a little bit more, like I mentioned. 38% of opponents' frequency comes from the rim. They guard it pretty decently at an average range rate. They do they try to take away mid-range. Interestingly, the Nuggets only allow 28% of the opponent's shots come from the mid-range. So that's something to watch, because that's obviously the shot we know the Spurs want. They want the mid-range. LaMarcus wants that shot. DeRozan, Rudy Gay, all these guys want that shot. So that's something to note, that the Nuggets are sixth in taking away the mid-range shot. What do you think about that?
So this is something that we'd have to watch the film to know for sure. But I wonder if part of that is just because almost all of the other teams don't play the way that the Spurs do, looking for those mid-range shots.
Yeah.
And maybe it's less about they are really good at keeping teams from shooting mid-range, and it's more about they're kind of not great about allowing teams to shoot where they want, and they just happen to keep the other teams to a good percentage. And obviously, again, that's something we'd have to watch the film to know.
Yeah,
I wonder
sure.
if because the Spurs hunt out the mid-range, if it would actually be more favorable for them. And a lot of this is just that's the way that the NBA is now, is to shoot free throws, three-pointers, and at the rim shots.
Exactly. So that's something to watch. You know, obviously, like you said, we do need to dig a little bit further into the film and not just rely specifically on these numbers. Another interesting stat that we kind of pointed out earlier was that the Nuggets are actually the worst team in the league in allowing corner threes, and that's a shot that the Spurs do like to find for themselves. The Nuggets allow about 10% of opponent frequency from the corner three. They don't guard it very well either. And then, like we said, they do take away the above the break three. That's a little bit more interesting. Again, that probably goes back to film, you know, watching the film as well and seeing why do they, you know, they're not great at guarding the corner three. And then also, you know, why do they allow a lot more mid-range shots? Did you have anything else on the shot location of the defense? Or?
No, I guess kind of like what you're talking about. Is that above the break three? Is that just, are they good at denying that period? Or is that off the first action? Because, you know, normally when the Spurs are shooting an above the break three, yeah, that's not the first action in the play. So that's another interesting thing to watch is how good are the Nuggets at defending the above the break three when it's not like the initial action?
Like in the second action, you're saying. Right, exactly. Like once DeRozan penetrates or once LaMarcus kicks it out and gets swung around a little bit. That's something to watch. Okay. That's something interesting. Let's talk about some other stuff that's not really on the score, on the stat sheet, Colin. Let's talk about just the coaching. You know, this is something that we can't really measure in numbers. Obviously, we can look at wins and losses, but this is obviously Mike Malone going to his first playoff series against Coach Pop, who is obviously, we know this, his resume, you know, a future Hall of Famer. Last night I was at the game with Dirk Nowitzki retired, and he called him the GOAT, basically. So, you know, Dirk has obviously had high praise for Pop. So we know that Pop can be get very tricky. You know, the thing is, he's like, you know, he plays chess sometimes in the playoffs, you know, with the kind of matchups, the philosophies he uses. What do you think about that? Just the fact that Malone's in his first playoff series, you know, I think it's his first one ever, right? Probably, most likely. I didn't get to research, so I apologize, first guest listeners, but most likely I think it is. I know that he had a funny quote last night when they asked him about it, the matchup. Malone said, you know, I have one wedding ring. Pop has five championship rings. Yeah. That's basically the difference in experience here in this matchup. What do you think about that side, the coaching part?
Yeah, so I think, you know, I'm trying to think of Malone's previous experience, and he might have been in the playoffs as an assistant coach, but I think, you know, he was a head coach in Sacramento, and he did well there, but he was fired before they got there. So yeah, I think that, you know, Malone has proven to be a pretty strong coach because of where he's taken this Nuggets team. There has been that improvement year over year. And, you know, now they're the second team that for parts of the year has looked really, really strong. But, you know, I kind of go back to that Rockets series where you have a strong offense, you have a team that's really good, and to tell Spurs fans out there, don't freak out if the first game is like a 30-point loss. Because, again, that's something that happened in that Rockets series. And I think that is actually going to be what to watch. You know, the Spurs might lose their first two games on the road, but I think looking at the difference between Game 1 and Game 2 will show, can the Spurs stay competitive in this series? Because I think Game 1 will be kind of that feeling-out game.
For sure.
And you know, even though the Spurs had this, you know, in retrospect, everyone talks about this amazing strategy that Pop employed that, like, completely dismantled the Rockets' offense, and they won, even though a lot of people favored the Rockets, and they just completely got run off the floor in the first game. So I think that sometimes those, like you said, those chess moves take time. You know, the real good chess players don't think one move ahead. They think, like, four moves ahead. And so I think that will be interesting to see, and that will be where Pop's coaching strengths come to show is what they look like in games 4, 5, and 6, but the Spurs have to get there for that strength to show.
For sure, and you know, for me, I really want to see what Pop does with Jamal Murray and Jokic. Just the fact that they're two young players, they're the two stars on their team. They're the guys that have the most responsibility in offense to create for their team. So, like you said, if they get going in games 1 and 2, how does he adjust? Like that's actually the example I was going to bring up, which you already brought up, which is that Rocket series a few years ago where, you know, it looked like Harden was unstoppable, and then Pop just brings in that defensive philosophy of kind of just taking away the rim and you know, dropping back and kind of living with those three-pointers. And so it was a philosophy that worked. So I really want to see how he does adjusting to Jokic and figuring out a type of chess matchup for him. The one thing I'll give Malone already, I think this is one of the kryptonite for the Spurs' offense is this. Ready? In case he needs, I don't think he needs a tip, obviously he's a coach. But one thing that worked really well against San Antonio this year that I noticed was there was a few weeks ago, there was a Miami Heat in San Antonio. Eric Spoelstra ran this 3-2 zone defense, or it was a 2-3. And it seriously, for like a whole half, almost three quarters, it threw the Spurs off. Now, luckily, they made enough threes. Their guys, their outside shooters, to, you know, Patty Mills, Bellinelli, all these kind of guys, their volume three-point shooters made enough three to kind of keep them in the game and bring them back. And then also, you know, the fourth quarter, DeRozan and Rudy Gay, they were able to penetrate Derek White and kind of figure out a way to score enough just to beat the Heat. But if you really want to talk about really messing with the Spurs and throwing them off balance on offense, it's throw a zone at them. Why? Because their top three players, even top four with Derek White, DeRozan, Aldridge, Rudy Gay, Derek White, none of these guys want to shoot threes. Mm-hmm. And that's the perfect way. You're basically, when you're playing that zone, you're taking away the rim, you're taking away the mid-range from them, you're not putting them on the free throw line. So what do you think about that in the event that Malone does it for, like, you know, three or four quarters in a game?
Yeah, obviously the Spurs have really been given trouble by that. And I think that it'll be interesting to see if the Nuggets use it at all. You know, I haven't watched the Nuggets enough to know if they've used it all season at all. I can imagine, you know, I think of the zone, and maybe this is incorrect, but I think of the zone as almost, in the NBA, kind of like a desperation defense.
Yes,
you know,
I do that too.
Miami pulled it out, and it worked well against the Spurs. A couple other teams, Charlotte pulled it out, and it worked good against the Spurs, I think, at one point. I remember the Spurs actually pulled it out against the Heat in the finals one of those years when the Heat was playing really well. So it'll be interesting to see, and I do wonder, with a young and inexperienced team, if they try using a defense that they have not practiced all season, if that will be something that it has been effective as it has for the other teams. You know, the Heat is like an extremely disciplined team. Or with that youth and inexperience, if trying to do something completely new to throw off the Spurs will throw themselves off instead. So I think it's definitely worth trying if the Spurs are getting whatever they have, because it has bothered them. But I'd be interested to see how well they play the zone.
Yeah, and again, I do think that, you know, I don't know, like you said, I don't know how much the Nuggets have practiced this, how much they have it in their tool bag, but or in their backup tool bag, should I say. But, you know, you definitely got to know that their scouts have that Miami game pegged on game film in case that, you know, they do to exploit it, because it really did. I just remember, you know, that's when you're thinking about the Spurs, there's two things that they want: the rim and they want the mid-range. You know, that really puts them in a tough spot, because then they have to really rely on their outside shooters to make threes. And that's obviously, you know, most times they do shoot well, but we have seen what happens when the Spurs have a cold shooting night and with bad defense. You know, it just doesn't end up being a great combination. Next question is the youth. Obviously, you know, Bobby Marks from ESPN.com, he put out a tweet earlier today showing, like, the age range, the average age, should I say, of the eight teams out West. The number one team, the youngest team right now in the playoffs for the West right now, are the Nuggets. They're number one. The Spurs came in at number six out of eight, you know, being in terms of being the eldest. So what do you think about that? The fact that this Nuggets team, if I just look at the core guys, I think I can name, let me see who's been in the playoffs probably in their experience. Will Barton played with the Blazers one time in the playoffs, and Millsap played with the Hawks, basically. Yeah. He's been in playoff battles. And then I don't know if Plumlee ever played with... No, I don't think he was with Brooklyn when he was there, or the other team. So I really just think it's like two guys from their team have playoff experience. How much do you think that's going to factor into the fact that the youthfulness of the Nuggets?
Yeah, I think that a lot of people think that the Warriors kind of skipped this. Because, you know, I think a lot of the times you look at these young teams and you kind of have to go round by round. Each year they're slowly improving. That even happened with the Spurs back in 2011. They lost in the first round. And they came back, they lost in the conference finals, and they came back and lost in the finals, and then won. I think that this team building, it sometimes takes this progression, like knowing, and obviously that might not equal a first-round loss, but I think it might show in some of that, you know. And even the Warriors, they did lose to the Spurs in that second round. They upset the Nuggets, you know, and that was their, oh, is this Warriors team real? And then they looked good against the Spurs, but they ultimately stopped them. So I do think that these young teams, you know, that might not end up mattering against the Spurs, but I do think that youth usually comes into play in the later rounds in terms of, like, playing really experienced teams that have been in the playoffs for a couple rounds. They really have their wits about them. I think it might show, but it might not show early enough for it to matter for the Spurs.
Okay, and I think that's, too, where you know, home court for the Nuggets is so vital, that if the Spurs can pull off a game one or two upset, or even like when they go on the road, like in five or possibly seven, you know, that's huge if they can get one of those games and really put the Nuggets, you know, those young Nuggets you know, put a lot more pressure on them than they already have. Consider, you know, there's actually a lot of pressure on them, right? Just the fact that, you know, a lot of people were saying, you know, different polls are going out and different, you know, predictions about, you know, that's the one team you want to play if you're one of the teams who wants to pull an upset. And so the Spurs did draw them. So that's obviously something to watch too, is how, you know, will Denver step up for this, rise for the occasion as being a youthful team, or will it kind of be their hindrance and them fall apart? So for this last exercise, Colin, I'm going to give you a pen real quick. We're going to do something fun here. Let's just see. I really want to see, you know, which team, you know, who has the most, I guess, like, favorable players that you would take in a series. So here's what we're going to do. I have nine spots. Let's say you and I are playing a pickup game, okay? We're team captains. We're going to use these 18 players, okay? The nine rotation players from each squad. We're going to basically do a little draft and pick our players. And we're going to see, you know, at the end of this, you know, who, basically what team, you know, what team has more players that you'd rather have in terms of that. So I'll give you the first pick. So every time you pick a player, just scratch them off that list, okay? And I'll write it down. Okay, pick, make your first pick.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Jokic first.
Okay.
Jokic is gone.
Okay. I'm going to go with DeRozan.
Okay, so I wanted to get DeRozan just for the Jokic-DeRozan matchup. And I don't know how well Aldridge and Jokic would play together, so I'm going to go with Murray next.
Okay, Jamal Murray?
Yeah.
Well, you're already taking the Nuggets twice to start this off. Okay. I'm not really high on this game, so I guess just because you need star, you know, talent. I'll go with Aldridge then. I didn't want like a post up back to back kind of player, yeah. Mid range. I wanted to go with none of these other guys. Create enough. All right, you're next. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm gonna go with White to give him some perimeter defense.
Oh, I forgot Derek White. Yeah. Derek White's gone. Okay. Gary Harris. I'll go with Gary Harris here. Just a matchup with White here.
Okay. Then I'll take Millsap next.
Okay. I'm not looking too much about this about, you know, in terms of matchups, but I'm just kind of just looking at, you know, who would I want in terms of just best players.
Right.
Okay, next I will go with Rudy Gay.
That's who I was gonna get next. So because of that, I think I'll go with Barton.
Okay. I'm gonna go with Malik Beasley next.
Okay, I'll take Mills.
Okay. Ooh, he got picked apart. Two of these guys. But I do trust. I'm going to go with Bryn Forbes here. Mm. Next.
I'll take Bertans.
Okay. Valanelli, Fertil, Craig, or Morris. I'm going to go Monty Morris next. Wow. I really don't like Marco's defense. I've just kind of seen him and I'm not picking him. Go ahead.
I'll take Bellinelli.
Okay.
Bellinelli, where are you at?
Okay. I will take. I'm gonna take Plumlee.
Okay. I'll take Pearl.
Okay. And I'll finish off with Torrey Craig. Okay, so I'm gonna kind of count up these how many our teams have and see kind of who has more. So my team has, in terms of Spurs, it has 1, 2, 3, 4. My team has 4 Spurs and 5 Nuggets. Your team has 1, 2, 3, 4 Nuggets and 5 Spurs. So. Oh, wow, so it's almost like just a dead even. Sorry, we didn't learn anything for that exercise. Yeah. I guess...
I will say, I did...
What did you think about that?
Just 4 of my first 5 players were Nuggets. So okay. We're talking about, like, the ones off the top. But I kind of went into the mode of, like, okay, I'm going to pick Jokic because I think he could be the best player in the series and then tried to build around him. But, yeah, I think that was a little bit concerning for me when... 4 of my first players end up being Nugget starters.
Yeah, so you see there. Now, here's what I think. I think that in terms of guys who can really have an impact on the series, I think there's 5 specific ones. Mm-hmm. And I think that you got the last guy. It's DeRozan, it's Aldridge, it's not in any order, but DeRozan, Aldridge, Jokic, Murray, and I think Derek White. And again, how does Derek White fare, though? Does he rise to that occasion? And does he play like that version of Derek White where we've seen where he has, you know, 15 to 20 point games with, you know, 5 to 10 assists? Or is he just that guy, like his stats say, 9 points, you know, 4 assists kind of game, just very conservative type approach. So I really feel like Derek, now that just reading that, I mean, Derek can be like the real X factor of this series in terms of does he make that progression or does he step up his game. That was a fun exercise. I guess first cast listeners, if you want to try that on your own, that was pretty cool that me and Colin did. You know, obviously I came out with 4 Spurs that I liked, and it's pretty bad at the end of the bench. You know, we were really, I think that defense is really huge on both of our brains because we didn't want to take a lot of these shooters just because of the fact that they don't play defense on the back end there. So, you know, it was just a fun exercise that we did. I wanted to see, you know, who has like the most talent on these two teams. And obviously we see that, you know, honestly 5 and 4 means that they're kind of like just, you know, very, very similar. You know, there's not really, and that's again why this is, if the Spurs do pull off this upset, it will not be shocking to the NBA because again, this is almost like, you know, everything statistically they match up very well. The off, you know, not one team's a great offense. I mean, they're both great offenses, but not one team's a great defense. You know, there's nobody's really sticking out defensively. Both of their four stars aren't really, you know, they don't really take it to the next level. If we even think about it, Jokic would probably be the only one right now, as far as I'm listening to different national media outlets, that might even make the All-NBA team out of this entire series. It doesn't look right now. So some writers like Aldridge, some don't. So nobody's really mentioned DeRozan at all. Murray's not getting any kind of All-NBA nomination. So really, there might be just one All-NBA player in this series, and that might just be Jokic. So that's really what it comes down to. This is a very even team, and obviously the Nuggets have the edge right now because they are the home court team, and they just played, you know, statistically they've been a little bit better, but you know, it's really hard to call this series. And kind of that's my last thoughts. I know we're gonna get into closing here, is that, you know, Michael DeLeon, our editor over at Project Spurs, you know, he had sent us our playoff prediction time to give our predictions for this matchup, and you and I both agree that we don't want to reveal our predictions right now, just because we do want to go back into the film and watch a little bit more detailed film before presenting those. Because, like, really, like right now, I'm really, like, just, like, if just right now, just based on these numbers, I would still go Nuggets in seven. And only, again, just because of the fact that I don't trust the Spurs on defense on the road, and I really don't trust their defense overall. You know, they show up sometimes, but they're not always there. So more so just on a safe pick, I would say Nuggets right now at seven, but that's not my final pick. I'll be giving that out before Saturday, and you will too, Colin, probably. What are your thoughts right now, just, you know, closing off before this series gets started Saturday?
So I think there's a good chance it'll be a long series, and I think that it's interesting how, you know, when you're in a series, it kind of all blends together, but you look back on series over time, and then you have, you know, a lot of Spurs fans who watch mainly the Spurs, and they might not know a bunch about Denver. They might have heard Jokic a lot. So one of the weird things that I always think about is, like, who are the players that Spurs fans are going to come to dread over the course of the next 2 weeks? Like, who are the players that they might not know much
Malik
about?
Malik Beasley, trust me. That's a guy. Even Morris, I think, is going to be a guy they're going to hate.
Well, I think Murray, Jamal Murray. Like, Jamal Murray, Spurs fans are going to... I mean, not because he's dirty or anything, but just because of how skilled he is on offense. I think that a lot of Spurs fans might not know who Jamal Murray is or what his skill set is, and I think by the end of this they're going to be hating. I mean, he was a big reason why they came within 1 point against the Spurs at the beginning of March, when the Spurs had that huge lead and they brought it back. You know, that's just the type of player he is. And I think by the end of this, Spurs fans are going to be thinking, when he has the ball shooting for three, like, not this guy again.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing too, is if he takes almost five a game, and he's making, what did I say, 37%. I mean, that's a good percentage. And again, he may make Pop have to readjust his defense with that above the break three when he comes off the screen, and the Spurs do kind of give that shot up. So, you know, this will be a really fun series to watch. I was so happy that they didn't draw the Warriors, because I was already tired of that matchup, and I already knew who I was picking in that one if that was the matchup. And again, five, you know? Like we said, like Colin and I said, if the Spurs can get past these guys, the Nuggets, they have a chance of, you know, making it pretty far, especially getting to round two. You know, there's not, you know, it's almost like even teams again there too. There's not really one team that specifically stands out in that next matchup should they advance. So obviously, thank you, SportsCast listeners, for listening to this episode 536. Follow Colin on Twitter. His Twitter account is @ColinReedPS. Keep checking Project Spurs. You know that the playoffs are coming now, so we'll be having, you know, different kind of pieces after every game. A lot of different content. So look for that. On these stats that me and Colin use, I know that a lot of them, we just read numbers and stuff. So what I'll do, SpursCast listeners, if those of you that are interested, I'll put all these stats in the SpursCast, this episode, the page for it. So when you look for it on projectspurs.com, just look for the SpursCast episode 536. And then when you click on that link, just open it, and I'll have all these stats kind of built in there, just so that you all can see, because I know it's a fun exercise to kind of look at a lot of these numbers that we dug up for Spurs Nuggets. So game one tips off on Saturday. We will see what happens. For Colin Reed, I am Paul Garcia. Thank you, and have a great day.